and welcome to Funny Business, a big banging guest episode coming at you hot today. I'm Locke.
I'm Rob, and today we have Matt, the founder of Fractal, taking over the performance and fashion, you know, what did he say, performance and...
He's going to have to listen to it, I think.
How did he present it? I feel bad that I've got it wrong, but I feel like this is a brand that we've loved for a long period of time now, and I feel like there's a reason that they've built such an authentic brand, doing cool things. If you haven't seen their headwear that they've got, it's pretty insane. Their hats, they look like they would fit your bald head very, very nicely.
I was going to say, it gives your grey hairs room to breathe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're like, very light, and when you're running and jogging, I remember catching you in Torquay running up the hills with the shirt off. You were moving very slowly, but... the passion was there, you know?
Well, Matt's got some big news coming up around a crowdfunding campaign they're doing for the Fractal brand. And I feel like if anyone's interested in the world of like starting products, doing e-com, learning to grow and scale something by yourself, build a team, make things happen, scale globally, it's got all of it in this chat and more.
You're very good at that now. Very good.
Matt, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business Podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me on. Yeah, my name's Matt Neuter, based on the Sunshine Coast. And, yeah, currently I'm the founder of Fractal, which is a little headwear company born out of the sunny coast. And, yeah, sort of got a few hats around the world now, which is pretty cool.
How many hats do you have in your wardrobe at the moment?
Jeez, my wife's constantly telling me I've got far too many, but you know, you wear a different running kit each day, don't you? So I've got to have something that matches that, and you know, so I've got far too many, and I, you know, sort of nostalgic as well. So I like to keep one of each that we make along the way. So probably far too many, but you know, it's hard to get rid of them.
You're talking to a couple of hat people. I feel like I'd sleep in my hat if I could. I love beanies, I love hats, I love headwear because I'm insecure about my bald head, Matt. So. I like to cover it up. And Fractal, light as a feather, and just it's a good fit too. It's like when you get a good cut t-shirt or something like that, and it makes you look a bit sexier, feel a bit sexier, you know?
Oh, whatever it takes. I feel you with the – I'm losing a few hairs at the moment anyway, so mine's permanently fixed as well.
Well, mate, we've had a few people on the pod over the last few years who do hats. We've had some. You're wearing an Eat Your Water hat, Liam Scanlon from Eat Your Water. We've had Dane at Good Lids. We've
the Offence Boys.
The Offence Boys. I feel like headwear and like hats. It's so meaningful. Like, people, I know it's for men and women, but a couple of dudes talking about it. Yeah. I feel like we definitely do love our hats. What got you passionate about this space in the first place?
Yeah, it's a funny one, hey. And hats are always, you know, they're on, you know, they feature as well. So it's something that always pops up in videos, and you know, it's easy, it's great it's a great product to have as a marketing tool. But sort of from my perspective, growing up on the sunny coast and running everywhere, it's sun safety is number one. And I think most people's kits and you know what people are wearing is always. Like most of the time, it's always black, and I thought, oh, why aren't we creating something a bit more fun, a bit more authentic? You know, something that people can represent themselves with, show a bit more character. And yeah, it's just what I thought was a simple hat to make on day one turned out to be far more complex than just a hat, and went down a rabbit hole. And yeah, here we are.
What was the first hat? What was the prototype? The one that you were like, this is the OG.
Oh man, we had some rough stuff at the start. I tell you, we had a black and white. We brought 100 black hats and 100 white hats, and they were like a stiff brim, like really, you know, pretty rigid, and it makes me sick thinking about what we brought out. Now I don't know how we moved that stock, but we did. But yeah, no, we've come a long way since then. But yeah, just the OG black and white hats. Yeah, it's nice to look at them every now and then and realize, oh yeah, we've actually come up with something pretty decent since then.
So you're a runner. Is that what got you into it? Were you always running around in the grass and around the roads and stuff? And because people now I've never seen more people running in my life, you know? I feel like...
Oh, man, it's crazy at the moment. Yeah, it's just we're in another running boom, 100%. It's really cool to see, to be honest. But what got me into it personally was... So in 2011, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, which is a genetic eye condition. And cutting a long story short, basically I went to an ophthalmologist one day and was told I would never drive again and I'd be blind at 30 years old. I was 21. So basically I didn't drive home from that appointment and I haven't driven driven since. So I my mode of transport became running to get to work, you know, to just to do anything. Was I had to either ride my bike or run to get there. And you know, public transport here on the Sunshine Coast isn't too crash hot. So that was pretty tough. And yeah, sort of what got me into it, I just, you know, started finding a love for running. It was obviously my outlet, trying to process what I'd been, you know, just diagnosed with, and trying to deal with all that prognosis. And yeah, so it was my outlet for, in terms of the mental side of things. And yeah, like I was sort of trying to think long term as well, like how long can I keep doing what I'm doing? I was working as a surveyor in like construction industry and stuff like that, and so I had to tell my boss I could no longer drive, which is a big part of, you know, at that job. So I became office based, and yeah, just sort of tinkered up with ideas about what could I start on the side for a bit of fun with a passion that, you know, who knows where it'll end up, and didn't think too much more of it. And yeah, sort of came up with the idea of Fractal from there.
As a young dude at 21, getting told something like that, I can imagine it would have been a lot to take in and to drastically change your life or deal with something like that. Like, how's I guess your mindset gone now, being nearly a decade since hearing that?
Yeah, ups and downs. Fortunately, I've got a good group of people around me, my wife, and you know, everyone who's supported me, chauffeuring me around. But it was only last year, early last year, that I got classified legally blind. So it's got to that point now. I'm now 33, and you know, I'm you know, going down that route. It's incurable, and there's no consistent rate of deterioration. So I don't know what the future holds necessarily. It's just a matter of one day at a time. And it's opened up so many doors. Like I see the, as cliche as it is, I see everything in a different light, quite literally. And it's opened up, you know, just a whole new passion that I didn't even think existed. So just running has flowed onto to business and the whole community and the people I've met through it. The way I get through it is I constantly just tell myself there's always someone else worse off than myself. And I try not to complain about it. Is, you know, what's the point? Nothing can be done. So just keep soldiering on.
No, that's
fuck, man. You're inspiring, dude. Love to get. Let's go into this, like the early parts of starting Fractal, and like, had you had any experience before running businesses or wanting to start things or something as a kid? You thought like, I want to do my own thing at some point.
No, not as bad as it sounds. No, I had no, didn't really come from a business background, have no family in business. It purely became out of a love for running and community. So like I, 6 months before we had a physical product, I created an Instagram page, and for some reason I thought it'd be cool just to post running related content and captions every single day. And I think I went the first 3 years of the business religiously posting every single day and just showed up consistently. And obviously we brought product in about 6 months in, but we had already built a little community, a little base that trusted us just from what we're putting out there into the world without any wanting anything back. It was just purely value driven. And we built it. So the first two products came out, and we, you know, we took probably 6 months to sell 200 units. But it was just so organic, and it still is. It's just very much community driven, and I just got to know people within this social media network, and then obviously here in Southeast Queensland, it's a pretty tight knit group. And then yeah, sort of how it sort of came to be.
What about some of your learnings from, like, if anyone's out there thinking about trying to start a product business? And I can imagine some of the stuff that you've had to deal with over the last few years. We've had like supply chain stuff from different people about trying to import different things. Like, how have your thoughts gone around like designing product, manufacturing product? Love to get into some of that.
Yeah, it's, you're constantly learning. Hey, like you know, it's two steps forward, one step back with a lot of this stuff. So you know, key drivers for me have been like persistence, consistency, and you know, not taking no for an answer, basically. And you know, you've got to be willing to do the work. So we've had, yeah, through COVID, like we're blessed in the fact that everyone took up running. So in terms of like our growing our e-com business and like retail slowed down for sure, but we don't see freight anything still at the moment. So everything's coming by air, and that sort of kept our business ticking along quite well. And you know, we're quite lucky. We had a few different revenue streams. We weren't too hit hard compared to a lot of the people through COVID. But Yeah, it's a minefield in terms of sourcing and stuff like that. We got super lucky. Bit of a like a backstory was our first run that we did with that 100 black and 100 white units. I actually went through a middleman in Melbourne, a company that sort of influences and different brands and stuff go to make their own apparel. I said, oh, hey, this is a cool idea. This is my brand. Can you guys source a hat and produce it for us? And you know, they went to China and they have their connections and they have their factories that they deal with. And in that time while they were doing all that, I was, you know, constantly online trying to source my own stuff because I knew it wasn't sustainable. Like what they charged me was just outrageous. And I was like, I'm not going to have a business here at all. So I was doing the hard work, hard yards at night. And yeah, I was talking to this one supplier and in the background of the video call that I was having with her, I could see the fractal hat, the prototype that she was making for this company that I'd been working with through Melbourne. And I was like, you're kidding. That's the hat I want to make, like in the background of our video call here. And so I'd found the supplier that, you know, had obviously been tried and tested through this other company. So I was able to cut them straight out and now built, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, built this exceptional relationship with them across a few different factories now. So yeah, it's just, that was just one of those lucky moments in the process. Otherwise I could still be trying to find the right factory. It's tricky.
What about like, I feel like you love doing new things, like new challenges and stuff. Cause I feel like being a founder of a business, there's so many different moving parts. What is your mindset and approach to tackling new tasks and new challenges that you might not have faced before?
Yeah. Like I said, I don't really come from this background. I juggled an in like surveying job for 3 years whilst building this for the first 3 years. And I just found there's always a solution. You're somewhere, like whether you're Googling it, you're on YouTube, you try and find someone, like you just each new challenge that pops up, like there will be a way to work it out, and just not backing down from that has been kind of my go-to plan all the time. And I do throw myself in the deep end a lot. Like my fear is always becoming stale. So I'm constantly like, the second I feel like something has become boring, I'm just like, no, screw it. I'm going to launch myself and send a trillion emails to get projects on the go. And then all of a sudden I've got all this work that I technically probably shouldn't be able to do in that time frame, but you just make it work. Like work best under pressure. And yeah, throw yourself in the deep end and you'll learn how to swim pretty quick.
Well, man, you mentioned too off air that you've got two little ones, a four-year-old and a nine-month-old. Love to get into, as people who know who listen to the pod all the time, I've got a two-year-old at home. I'd love to get into a little bit about like juggling business and family life and maybe the crossover or the challenges of maybe that all blurring into one.
Yeah, exactly. I think you nailed it. It's been tricky, especially like, since I went full time a couple of years ago, and you know, working from home, having your office in the same, you know, building as where your two kids are yelling and screaming in the next room is super challenging. Like, comes with its pros. You can obviously, you know, help out where you can and see them grow up far more than, you know, when I was out of the house 10 hours a day. But yeah, just trying to find that balance is super tricky. And I feel like I'm a better father and a better businessman. And when I sort of try and find that balance as well, and like have to separate myself. So I was just saying before, like to come to a different, like work out at the cafe for a few hours, go for a run, might make myself go for a run in the middle of the day, or, you know, go work out of a different environment, definitely allows me to focus, get what I need done. And then, yeah, come home and be the family man that I need to be. But you know, at the same time, I'm still jumping on calls at 7, 8, 9 p.m. with people in the U and, you know, the different side of the world that is part of the process of building a brand, and just trying to find that balance is super tough. But at the same time, exceptionally rewarding.
What about like goal setting and stuff like that, like planning out your year and like the quarter and stuff? How do you go about that for Fractal?
Yeah. The first, if I'm completely honest, the first 3 years, we were just flying blind, and there wasn't too much forethought. It was just, okay, we sold through these, let's have another go and keep fleshing it out and building it out. But yeah, we've got to the point now where it's a little bit more complicated, and you know, chatting with distributors and retailers, and it's like, okay, we need products 6-12 months programmed in advance now, and trying to forecast that is an art that we're slowly learning. You know, just got back from a trip to the States in December where we basically presented our 2024 product to American retail, which is super exciting. And yeah, like just getting organized for that and knowing, you know, finding all our fabric, having all our fabric lined up, which we send to our factory, and getting all those samples made. So it's really like my role has quickly become like finding, like you've got to find the time to step back and like, okay, what's happening today, but what's happening in 6 months, what's happening in 12 months and 24 months. And that's, as a founder and a small business owner, you're juggling a million different jobs. It's actually super, like, yeah, it's one thing I struggle with is just separating the day-to-day from next week, from 6 months, from 12 months down the track. So yeah, it's just forcing myself to make the time just to isolate those forecasting periods and those planning periods is pretty key.
Is it a cool thing to personally reflect on, seeing like knowing the fact that you're having these conversations with people in the States, you've got things going on across the world, like you mentioned at the start of the chat, like doing that initial small run of hats, trying to think like how are we going to get rid of these black and white hats, to now being able to present the brand that it is, and I guess the global web that you guys are spreading. You know, it must be a pretty cool thing to be able to look back and like tap yourself on the shoulder a bit and go like, fuck, I've done this. I did this. You know, I made this happen.
Yeah. Good point. And probably like a lot of business owners, you don't step back enough to really appreciate that. Like even just hearing that today, like what you just said is like, oh yeah, no, you're right. It's a pretty cool achievement. We don't probably reward ourselves or pat ourselves on the back enough. It's constantly like, okay, what's next? And I don't think the second I think that we've achieved what we need to achieve, we're probably, I think we're going backwards. So I'm always moving forward. But it is wild. Like, you know, you jump on our website at the moment and everything's sold out, and our issue at the moment is keeping stock in hand. And it's, yeah, I didn't think you'd get to this point. It's just over the last 12 to 18 months sort of gone another level. And it's, yeah, a bit of a like, oh, hang on a sec, we've got a real business here.
What about for people who are, I guess, like running e-com, having to like manage different social channels or understand how to like build a brand? Key learnings? I'm sure you've met a bunch of people along the way too that might have been able to like share wisdom and insight or learn from other brands that are doing cool stuff.
Yes. It's a fascinating one. I think like building, like we've stayed so niche. Obviously, we're still in the headwear space currently. We've got plans to sort of shift that a little bit, but we've built, I think just building trust and building a community around the product has to come first. Like, your product can be great, but if you've got no trust and community behind it, you might sell through them in 12 months and everything. You might make a quick buck, but you're not going to be there tomorrow. Authenticity, being real, and like building a brand is what I've tried to really focus on over the 5 years. I feel like that's got us to where we are today, rather than, yes, the product's fantastic, but you know, I'm sure someone else could probably go and make that if they really wanted to go down that path. But it's that brand building that's just essential. And I think, you know, ingraining yourself with people in the community, showing up to run clubs, and there's a million different ways to skin a cat, but I think the way we want to do our business and the way we've done our business is being very wholeheartedly around brand building and actually giving a shit about our community.
What about being like the face of the brand and stuff? Like, I feel like a lot of founders, early stage founders, like, do I put myself out there and show my face with the products and the stuff that I'm selling, or do I just hide behind it and build the products? Like, what advice would you give to someone in that situation?
Yeah, no, that's something I'm really working on at the moment. And like the first, 6 to 12 months, I probably was a little bit more front of the brand, and given it was so local when we first started, a lot of people knew I might have been associated with it, and it was a bit easier. But as it's grown, I've naturally stepped back, and I haven't been the face of the brand at all. And I think, like, I just put something out on social media last week, and I'm no expert in creating content or anything like that, but I think it is important for brands. It becomes, you only got to look on social media with other brands and stuff at the moment, it can become so fake, and everything's super polished, and there is a place for that. But I think, again, it comes back to brand building. I think having a face that, or having whether it's the founder or someone else in the business that is attached to the brand, I think can become super critical in terms of just being relatable to the consumer, knowing that, hang on a sec, there are real people behind this brand, and that the purchase that they make puts food on the table for someone like myself and my two kids. Like, it's real stuff. And I think that's what a shift I want to work on myself is finding the time to create a bit more content as the founder on behind the scenes and saying, hey guys, yes, we've grown, but we're still the same people here that we were on day one, and we appreciate every single order that comes in.
You mentioned a couple of times about building brand. Love to get into a little bit about what you feel about makes a good brand or what makes Fractal special. What do the people say? What are the things that you've done over the years to sort of embed yourselves as part of that community?
Yeah. I think some of the key, the feedback we constantly get is our customer service is second to none. So from day one, whether that's in-person customer service, so when we attend events, whether that's just replying to customer service emails, we'll bend over backwards for people to ensure that, customers are always happy. I'm sure it should probably be pretty obvious for businesses, but I'm sure from what I can gather, a lot of people aren't doing it well. And we pride ourselves on our customer service. So we get asked, daily, we get people doing charity runs and this and that and constantly asking for support. And, we're not a big company. We can't offload cash here, there and everywhere to everyone trying to raise money. But 99 times out of 100, we will say, yes, here's a couple of hats. Try and support, use them as prizes, wear them on your run. Just trying to support. My motto has always been support good people doing good things. So I'm not a big fan of the whole ambassador term, so to speak, and influencing. And I've never gone really down that route. The first 4 or 5 years, we had no ambassador program. I didn't want to send product to influencers and say, hey, guys, you need to post this hat 3 times a week or video, whatever it is. If people like the product, they're going to wear it. And I would rather seek and support good people doing good things in the community because it just has a flow-on effect.
Oh, I love it.
Keeps it simple, baby.
What about some other brands out there that you've taken inspiration from that either it doesn't have to be inside the same category, inside sports? I'm sure that you yourself have liked a bunch of other brands or see what they've done well, or is there anything like that that you've you still think about or you use as a reference point for stuff that you do?
Yeah, the cycling industry was what sort of inspired me on day one. Some of the boutique cycling brands, you got your Black Sheep Cycling, which are probably the first one that comes to mind that started in Brisbane, just sort of down the road from us. And, going back 5 or 6 years ago, they were sort of leading the charge in some of the limited edition runs and sort of ingraining in the community as well. And the fashion, the blend of fashion and performance as well. And they, the whole cycling brand and culture that exists, especially down in the cities like Sydney, Melbourne, it's massive. And I always wondered why it's a bit different now. The run clubs are popping off, like you said earlier, but why wasn't there such a thing in the running space? I just felt it was way more individual and so I really took inspiration from some of those cycling brands early on. And even today, just about how they, were really community driven and the cyclists would meet at cafes and they all be wearing the kit and it was all just this interconnected product and community sort of aspect. And that's sort of been I wanted to bring that to the running world. Why wasn't that happening in the running space? Why aren't there running teams and running crews popping around everywhere at events and stuff like that? We're definitely starting to see that a bit more now, but 5 years ago, there was none of it.
What about with you mentioned customer service before, building up a brand and starting it up. It was not really, you don't really have time to switch off when someone places an order at 10 o'clock, can you? And then something goes wrong and you want to be responsive, but you're also I need to sleep. How did you ever have them sort of battles around, I want to do a really good job, but I also need to be energized?
Yeah. Oh, look, the first, I was packing every single order for the first 3 or 4 years out of my spare bedroom and garage. And I, much to my wife's disgust, was, if I saw an order come in at 10 p.m., I'd probably be I've got to go pack it. I couldn't help myself. I just wanted to get it. Everything was just, I knew the postie would be coming at 11 a.m. the next day. If there was an order that came in at 10:59 a.m., I would pack that order to at the fastest possible rate, just to make sure it got out on that day. I quickly realized that sort of stuff's not sustainable, but it's all those little 1%ers that added up, I reckon, over the early period that hang on a sec, these guys, I ordered that 2 minutes ago and it's already with the postie. What are they doing? And word gets out that, oh, that, you know, these guys are doing the right thing. It's evident that we're making an effort. And yeah, now as we grow, it's just like, how do we maintain those sort of key components of the business while also ensuring my mental health and relationships stay, you know, sane.
Well, mate, that's probably going to say it's probably a good segue. A question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Yeah, two things. One would be obviously going for a run, and that's been my outlet, obviously, sort of since day one of kicking this thing off, which makes running a business around that very easy. But not taking my phone with me, not wearing my watch, definitely, or turning off notifications is a key one for me. And then living by the water, something as simple as jumping in the ocean. Like my wife and I always say, like, you know, things are tense or tough at home with the kids, pack up, let's go to the beach. And jumping in the surf will 99 times out of 100 make you feel infinitely better.
I feel like you guys are the same sort of people.
Yeah, we get to the beach.
Salt water, baby. Get it on me.
Disconnecting a bit, but I'd like to go back a bit with like maybe like from, I feel like we talked about like sort of early days of Fractal, but I know at the time of this episode coming out, you got some interesting news about where you sort of where it's going, what you're trying to do. Love to get into a little bit about like from now forward, where do you see Fractal going?
Yeah. So like sort of skipped over it, but our name, for example, Fractal is like spelt with an A at the end rather than the E, is actually like a mathematical pattern. So fractal patterns, we're very much outdoor inspired, and you know, fractal patterns appear in nature, rivers, snowflakes, mountains, etc. And like the idea with fractal patterns is that with one idea there are infinite possibilities. So to answer your question is basically like we started with one idea and we feel like we've barely touched the sides, and the scope is endless. And so basically we've built this framework over the last 5 years, this community and this brand, and we're ready to leverage that. And so we're just a pretty exciting time. We're just launching a equity crowdfunding campaign through Equitize. So basically, given we're a community driven brand, and we're really going to lean on them to rally behind us and take the next step as a business, and you know, offload some equity, and go down a new path and explore some different products, and just keep leveraging the brand and the trust that we've built over the last 5 years, and get everyone behind us.
Is that a cool moment for you to, like, I know we've said before about like moving to global markets, but again, now, like, I can imagine the pressure attached to being starting this yourself, trying to figure out how to build and scale it, going, do I have to raise cash in? Do I got to give some stuff away? Who do I got to bring in?
How do I build this? Yeah.
Can I do this by myself? Oh. Like, I'm sure that you've had a bunch of thoughts go through.
Yeah, like, you know, having not really been down this path before, just into like simple things like hiring, like when to hire staff, and, you know, how to expand into France, and you know, like ordering, like getting our 3PL framework set up. So warehouses, with the whole Brexit situation, we had, you know, we had a 3PL set up in the UK, and all of a sudden everyone in Europe's like, I don't want to buy a hat because the taxes on that is just insane. So all of a sudden we've got to quickly organize a warehouse in France. And, you know, we've got a USA is going exceptionally well at the moment, so we hope that'll quickly surpass Australia. But yeah, no, it's a pretty crazy time, and I think just learning to make some calls on the fly, but yeah, just trying to work out where we're all headed is an exciting time.
What about YouTube videos, Netflix, all that sort of stuff? Are you a consumer of content? Do you like docos? Do you like comedies? Give us the spiel.
Yeah, I've been a bit of a sucker for YouTube, whether it's just going down other founder stories paths, or just, you know, content, like I'm sort of falling into this trap of, you know, unfortunately, as much as I dislike a lot of social media, that content is key. And just the different forms out there, like even TikTok, I've fallen in a vortex of scrolling on there, just, you know, brand, seeing other founders popping up on as becoming face of the brands, and seeing how there's no one in our space doing it at all. And I'm like, is that a sign that I need to do that, or is that a sign it's not working? And I'm trying to like look at it optimistically. I'm like, hang on a sec, I think this is a space here. Why the hell is there no one in the apparel space, let alone male founders, getting in front of the camera talking about what's going on. It's just this huge hole in the market. So that's something I get stuck into. You know, I like to treat myself to a bit of Premier League soccer over in the UK and watch some of that stuff, switch off, get a poker. Nothing too crazy, but yeah, that's sort of YouTube and TikTok and Instagram are sort of my social channels at the moment.
Poker baby.
Poker
life. Phil Ivey, he wears the sunnies, doesn't he?
Yeah, Phil Ivey, dude. He's watching a bit of poker lately too.
Yeah,
you love the strategy, don't you?
I just like something to watch, something to listen to. Takes up hours. Life's just filling in time. You know, like that's how I feel sometimes. Like there's always shit to do, but man, something I can play for 12 hours sounds great.
Yeah, well, that's it. And, you know, that's how I paid my way through uni, was playing a bit of poker. So, you know, it ticks the gambling box. You know, you get the endorphin hit from that. It's an easy way to switch off. I've got the maths in there as well. It feels like I'm learning something. And, yeah, that's a good little game.
I remember when they had Absolute Poker and stuff, when you could do it all online and shit. I was like, straight after school, always on that shit. Fucking.
It's not ideal, huh?
That's why they banned it. It was fun, though.
Seriously, I think one of the things that the question you like to ask, and the clients are trying to steal your question, is like, have you had any like moments of doubt along the journey, or like questions where something might have come up, or pivotal moments where you're thinking, is this going to work out? Is this right? Do I need to sort of scale back or change, go a different direction?
Yeah, like. Probably more like early on, there's just little product faults. Like you get a shipment arrive, and you thought you had nailed didn't arrive the way you wanted it to, and you just like you have these little micro things that pop up, and you doubt like, oh man, is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Like how do you never nail it? Like there's always refinement on every product that arrives, and you're like, oh, how's the customer going to receive this? And whether you have shipments that get delayed, or whether it's, you know, like especially overseas where we have less control, you know, using third party logistics and stuff like that. And, you know, the LA or the different postal services, like Australia Post, credit to them, they do a bloody good job over here. But over there, it's like missing parcels and customers, you know, messaging, oh, where is it? And like, oh, geez, like, is this going to end? Like, how do you manage these things? Is it worth it? And at the end of the day, like, you keep your head down, and like going back to what I said earlier, like you find a way out of these things. And you know, the next day it's a fresh start and you go again. But it does. There are moments where you're just like, oh, geez, like it's tricky, and a lot of it's products and logistics related, which is frustrating, but it's just keeps you on your toes.
Resilience is a big thing, I feel like. Like people like who want to get into building a business and that might get clipped a couple of times and then just be like, this isn't for me. But I feel like it's just a constant hit. I feel like you're just constantly learning how to fall when you're just like, there's always problems. There's always difficult things.
It's just like every day.
Yeah.
Like,
it sounds very negative, hey, but at the end of the day, like there are, of course, there's highs, but you've got to be willing to take those hits to reach those highs, that's for sure.
Well, mate, we're early in 2024. What are you excited about for this year?
Oh, man. Well, first off, yeah, this crowdfunding campaign, I think the opportunity there is super exciting. So just keen to see how our community perceives it as well. And just in terms of getting our name out there a little bit further, and like putting my face to the brand a bit more, I'm excited about doing that and just freshening up a bit of the content from my perspective as the one that looks after it. It's like, oh yeah, well, if I'm not bored, the consumer's probably not bored. So it's just looking to do something new there. We've got a heap of new product stuff in the works, you know, whether it's apparel and our custom program, which is going insanely well. Like we're opening into some new avenues there, which super exciting, and way more community activations. So like getting to more events this year than we have ever have, and whether it's a pop-up store or down at your local run crew through the week, we got some big plans there. So more projects on the go than I could probably tick off, but yeah, there's plenty going on, and it's going to be without doubt our best year.
Well, we're big fucking fans of your work and wish you nothing but success. So we'll keep a close eye on what you're building, because it's been unreal to pick your brain and hear how it all started. For us, like we said earlier, like we've seen the brand for a few years now and a big fan, and
It's good to hear your story, and I can understand why now so many people resonate with what it is, because it's been built so authentically. So if you are interested and you're listening along, you want to learn more about getting involved, we'll put all the details in the show notes about how to find more details of the crowdfunding raise and that too.
I can do that.
Go and check it out. But Matt, thank you so much for your time, man, and good luck with everything this year.
Pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That was special. That was special. I always feel pumped up after chatting with people who give you energy. You know, he was authentic as, no frills, didn't pull no punches, kept it real.
Pretty incredible story, pretty authentic dude. I like people who just like share openly, and like we only just met him before the chat, so it's like...
Felt like good chemistry, didn't it?
Yeah,
it's like when you meet someone and they're just like, I think we could be friends.
We could be friends, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Have we just made a friend?
I felt like that. Well, hey, if you're new to the Funny Business Podcast, we drop 3 episodes a week, plenty of guest episodes coming at you. This is actually our 300th.
Nah, 301st.
301st. Oh, yeah. I feel disappointed now.
Anyway,
301.
300 was
fuck,
last
so,
week.
So many, huh? So many. There's so many. So if you are new here and this is your first, just be grateful.
Dig back. We got plenty of good stuff.
Hey, Funny Business listeners, Caleb from SquareX here. I just wanted to jump on and let you guys know at the end of this ep, SquareX is currently open for investment. So if you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of the agricultural supply chains, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or to the Dream Big Social Club team to learn more.